You are listening to the United States of Football Show, your source for American soccer news, views, and opinions. The United States of Football Show. It's March 26, 2014. Earl Reed with Robert Hay. Robert, how have you been spending the last week or so?
I've got nothing funny tonight. I've been doing what I normally do, which is watch a lot of TV, think deep thoughts, contemplate the meaning of existence and the deeper questions that we all have to worry about every day, such as, you know, where did Landon Donovan get his hair back from and things like that.
Yeah, well, well, I mean, if you're running out of jokes, you might just be idolizing me because I hardly ever have. Most of my jokes are pretty rotten.
So. Oh, don't sell yourself short.
Yeah, well, that's
Some of our colleagues on Twitter, you're a lot funnier than them. Oh, although their unintentional humor is funnier than yours.
Yeah, well, it's pretty sad when your unintentional humor is more funny than your intentional humor.
Yeah, well,
that's not why I'm not a comedian by trade. I'm a chemist / soccer podcast co-host.
I'm too beautiful to be a comedian.
Well, that's why I wonder why you're on the podcast circuit. You know, it's like you'd be much better as a presenter. You know, you could make, you know, give Kyle Martino a run for his money.
I think even my wife would disagree with the fact that I could even be remotely as beautiful as Kyle Martino. And she's kind of, you know, biased towards me in a lot of ways.
I think DC United is on NBC Sports Network this weekend, so you might want to keep her away from you might want to keep her away from RFK, okay, if you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So, okay, well,
for many reasons we'll keep her away from RFK.
Yeah. Let's move into our first section, getting towards the realm of soccer and not in the realm of personal business, I guess. This past week, MLS bowed out of the CONCACAF Champions League altogether. Three teams, two big losses, and one that was at least somewhat encouraging, but still ended in the same ugly place, which is a place where no MLS teams make the semifinals of the CONCACAF Champions League. And so, just to give you the rundown, Los Angeles lost 4-2. I think we already talked about that a little bit, to the Club Tijuana, mm-hmm, down in the, what is that? Is that the Baja California area?
I don't know. Yeah. Just south of that part of San Diego and such.
For our Mexican listeners, I apologize if my Mexican geography is lacking, but I do know it's basically just south of San Diego, just over the border. So, mm-hmm, they get a lot of fans from the San Diego / Southern California area. Then the next night, San Jose almost got by Toluca. They took them all the way to penalties, but ended up losing. I believe Shea Salinas was the earthquake who, I believe he rattled the crossbar on his to lose. They took it 1-1 all the way till the bitter end, or maybe it was 2-2. I should have looked it up. I put 1-1, but now I'm starting to think that they actually got a goal down there. So, Sporting Kansas City then later on that night got crushed by Cruz Azul. I believe that was 4-1, which when you had the 1-0 result in Kansas City left at 5-2. Mm-hmm. So anyway, you know, this is kind of like a topic we go over probably once a year whenever this happens. And maybe it's time to revisit it. I don't know. Maybe it's not time, but we're going to anyway. So
you're stuck with it, kids.
I mean, where do you want to start? Go ahead. I mean, there's some things we could talk about. Reasons. There's path forward.
I want to start on the idea of whether we should even care about this. And maybe that seems like an obvious answer, but I just want to hash over it really quickly because I'll give you my perspective. But, you know, the intellectual side of me says, yeah, I should care about the fact that MLS teams are competing against the best teams in other leagues. And, you know, winning the CONCACAF Champions League is obviously a nice feather in the cap for MLS. But, you know, I don't ever make an effort to really watch these games, which sounds horrible coming from a person who does soccer podcast. I mean, I do watch them, but I don't sit there and set my clock by them and sit there and say, LA's playing Club Tijuana tonight at 10 o'clock. I'm going to stay up and watch it. It's more of, oh, you know, it's 9 o'clock and the game's on. Let me turn on the game. You know, I think for me emotionally, these games just don't have much of an impact. Maybe it's because it'll change when I have my local team in it. But for the most part, these games are just fodder in the schedule, road bumps on the regular MLS season. And maybe that's for the reasons we're going to get into about why MLS isn't doing so well. But for the most part, I just don't. You know, I hear all this gnashing of teeth, grinding and gnashing of teeth about how poorly MLS is doing. And for me, at the end of the day, it doesn't really affect the product on the field or how I view the product on the field.
Well, I think that attitude is a bit of the reason why MLS has tended to, you know, like teams tend to play, you know, their second string, you know, the reserves. You know, San Jose, even in their match, I believe they started JJ Caval, who is a you know, central midfielder, defensive midfielder. They started him in the back line, and you didn't have Bernardes, you didn't have Clarence Goodson. I mean, it was pretty much a makeshift back line.
Although, to be fair, they're basically taking people off the street at this point. They're so injured, so that might be more of an injury situation.
But I mean, the point is that historically MLS hasn't really taken this you know, they've taken it in a similar realm as the US Open Cup. You know, it's, you know, it'd be nice if the team got through, but they're not going to sacrifice what the fans really come out for, which is the weekend matches in the league and whatnot. So, you know, your point is valid, and maybe your perspective on this actually validates that kind of approach by the teams from, you know, MLS, not sitting there and throwing out their first team. Although LA did, it looked like Kansas City threw out quite a bit of it, and both teams got whacked pretty hard when it came to the road games. But, you know, I think you have good points. Number one, it's really difficult to find it. I mean, I basically, you know, I'm on a cable system. I don't get Fox Sports 2. And we talked about this last week in terms of the new MLS contract. If they go with Fox, if they end up on Fox Sports 2, I see that as potentially a death knell unless they help spur along Fox Sports 2 getting on more cable systems. I mean, if they can do that, then I don't know. People may watch the CONCACAF Champions League. I know I can't watch it. I watched two of the matches, and the reason I was able to watch both of them is because they were on Galavision, and I had to watch it in Spanish language because they were showing it there. So, you know, you have to get creative if you really want to watch these, if you aren't on a satellite network and have the sports pack, et cetera, et cetera. But you know, I think lately Major League Soccer has been talking more about the fact that they would like to win this, and they are encouraging teams to win this. I just don't know if there's enough encouragement. Do you think that let me ask you this. What do you think are the positives, and, you know, are there positives of actually winning the CONCACAF Champions League from the standpoint of growing either the team or the league or the sport in the United States?
I think there's a couple of positives. I think the biggest positive is you'd be able to stare down Mexico and win another competition against the Mexico League, which is, you know, anytime we can beat the Mexican national team or a team from League MX, then I think that's a positive for an MLS or a United States side, even a Canadian side, if you want to go there. So I think beating a very quality Liga MX team is always a positive. And a feather in our cap. You know, it's nice to be able to try and claim that title as the best league in the region. And I think there's positives to having the best teams from these different leagues play together. It's something different. You know, it's not just the same style of soccer. We talk about, you know, how MLS, for the most part, has the same style, except with some exceptions. You know, it's different styles, different players you'd normally get, different atmospheres. So that's a positive to the league, is the more MLS participation you have, the more of an ability there is to experience these different things. I think what the I'll just stick with my positives. I'll go into the negatives in a minute, but I think those are the biggest positives. And for the players themselves, the ability to go up against, you know, other players who will be national team players for you know, CONCACAF, primarily CONCACAF league teams, and to help improve their craft in an international setting, I think is a very big value, very big positive. But what did I miss there? What else is
No, I mean, I think you've hit pretty much
into the teams and players for the competition.
Well, I think being able to, you know, like you said, claim superiority is probably a, you know, and that's what MLS, I think, wants to be able to say is, gee, we are doing this on a budget. You know, definitely they can't go out and spend the money that Liga MX does. So if you're doing this with, you know, a salary cap, yes, you can go out and purchase three players that go outside of the capped budget for the rest of your squad. You can do that, but on the other hand, that does severely limit you, and clearly in a lot of these matches, I think you see not having the depth and not having the sort of the depth within the actual starting squad. You know, you have, you know, in LA, you have Keane, Donovan, and Omar Gonzalez. Well, and, you know, Juninho is pretty good, but then you start getting it down to the Giassi Zardes. You know, he might be good one day, but he's still pretty raw. You know, Rob Friend has been around, but, you know, he's not of the top quality at the moment. You know, and you have several other pieces there that just are not what you would call, you know, probably would not get a start in Liga MX. So, you know, for MLS to be able to say, gee, with our system, I mean, actually it might make a statement to the world, hey, look, we're doing this kind of a system and we're able to beat, and maybe even consistently beat a country that, you know, splashes a lot of cash and, you know, and see, we're doing the economically viable / responsible thing. But I mean, so that's what I mean. That would be their goal. I mean, that'd be another positive. I just don't know if that's attainable. I think that's one of the theories behind why Major League Soccer can't compete in this. And I think it's definitely plausible to, you know, plead that it's just without having your 4 through 11 be of higher quality, you're just never going to be able to compete in these two leg matches.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think there's another part of it we have to bring up, though, as well. And this is, see if I can delicately walk this minefield. You'll notice with these score lines where the heavier defeats come from are pretty much always on the opposing team's home soil. Mm-hmm. I think one of the disadvantages that MLS teams have is, for the most part, when you go play, you know, when Seattle plays Chicago, Seattle flies to Chicago, and there's a time zone difference, and there's plane travel and things like that, which affect the teams. But, you know, you're staying in a nice hotel, you're being transported to a field that's of a top quality. There's creature comforts there, you know, for the most part in MLS, except for RFK. You're being treated to a comfortable playing environment. In some of these stadiums against CONCACAF Champions League teams, they're professional stadiums and things like that. But you have the travel. You might have rougher conditions in terms of where you're staying, how you're getting to and from the field. The field itself might not be in the best of shape. And the fans are a lot more hostile, depending on who you're playing. So it's a much harder atmosphere to travel to and play games in than it is within MLS or the U.S. Open Cup. So I think that's a factor that can't be discouraged, and that's something MLS teams aren't used to.
Not to mention, Robert, if you're talking about Mexico City or anywhere around in there, you also have the elevation.
Yes.
Which is a factor, which is, you know, at least 6,000 feet in a lot of those places. Mm-hmm. And so you're talking a team like San Jose, which plays at basically sea level,
mm-hmm.
heading out to, Toluca, which is just outside the, I believe the metropolitan area of Mexico City. And, you know, that's at like I said, 6,000 feet, you know, mm-hmm. I mean, your legs are going to not be as strong, you know, you're not going to be able to, you know, get, you know, you don't have oxygen, so you're just not going to have the stamina, to be able, you know, so, and that maybe that's what makes San Jose's feat even more impressive, is that they actually held out even until penalties, which, you know, but maybe, you know, the other thing is maybe they're equipped to do that. You know, it's a team that's has a reputation in MLS. They got Toluca's coach complaining pretty heavily about their size, their physicality. You know, maybe that's the kind of game that MLS actually needs to take to one of the, you know, these Mexican teams that are more technically savvy. And
so what you're saying is they got Lenharted.
Well, that's one way to put it. But, you know, maybe that's the type of tactical trend that ends up defeating a team that maybe doesn't have quite the size but has more ability to pass it around and play along the ground and whatnot. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, that's sort of one of the classic tit-for-tats that's a part of, you know, tactical soccer throughout the generations has been, you know, football, anti-football, size versus on the ground, you know, swinging crosses versus play through the middle, you know, pass into space versus pass, you know, pass to feed, all that. You know, there's all sorts of different, you know, play football manager.
I was just about to say, it sounds like you're playing football manager right now.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, it's all, you know, for every total football, you have, you know, the Catenaccio that, you know, comes to thwart it. And, you know, each generation or each, generation of style kind of complements or directly counteracts what is brought about by the previous one. I mean, we see it in a lot of sports, but anyway, that's getting a little bit off the beaten path. So,
but no, that, I mean, that's a good point. And, that goes up to the tactical discussions that we've had in the past. You know, it's important when you're facing these teams with diverse backgrounds and diverse playing styles from different leagues and things like that to be able to adjust tactically. And a lot of MLS teams can't do that. They just have their style, and you know, a lot of times it's just a physical style, and they try and just bully each other, and that won't work when you have really world-class players on these other teams in different leagues with different playing styles. So it's a lack of adjustment, I think, in a lot of teams.
I mean, I'll throw out one other point that I think has some validity. I really don't think the U.S. players, especially the ones in MLS, have the, I don't know if the guile is the right word, but the intestinal fortitude to go into these places and actually make it happen. I mean,
well, that's
a very interesting point.
Let's
just call it out on the carpet. I'm just not sure that this, you know, I mean, yes, we've done it before. I mean, we've sent our national team down there and they've gotten, you know, results at, you know, the Azteca Stadium. But, you know, does Landon Donovan have that kind of thing for LA? I don't know. I mean, I'm just not sure. I have hope for Kansas City because this was their first real venture into this kind of competition. You know, you're going to have Matt Beisler and Graham Soucy and a lot of these other guys. You know, now that they've learned this, they'll be back there next year. You know, hopefully they get through the group stage and they get back to this and they'll be able to draw from that experience. But, you know, I kind of threw this out on Twitter. What if MLS was to say in public, we will offer $300,000 per player to the first team who wins the CONCACAF Champions League in MLS? I wonder if that would spur on any of these players to take this competition more seriously. And I mean, it might heap on pressure too, but I kind of wonder if this, you know, the group of players that we're talking about need some kind of a spur to be able to do this, you know, a little. Because I hate to say it, but I really feel like that's one of the knocks in this country, is that a lot of the players come from backgrounds that aren't necessarily, you know, you think of football, you think of basketball, not so much hockey, but I mean, those sports generally you think of almost street fighting, you know, like you have to be aggressive and you have to be, it gets drilled into you from the point of a child. And, you know, I don't know. I don't know if the socioeconomic part of soccer is not strong enough to be able to breed that kind of win at all cost mentality in the American soccer player. I mean, if there is a guy, I mean, I used to think maybe Clint Dempsey would be the type of guy that would have that sort of teeth in his game. You know, maybe someone like an Eddie Johnson. I mean, he seems to have a style that has a little more grit. You know, he's not afraid to go in there and bang around and stuff. But it's like, you know, there are certain players I just don't think that they, I don't know, maybe I'm saying too much, but I don't know. What do you think about that? It's a pepper pot of a situation.
Yeah.
You could,
I don't necessarily
call out some people, but
agree with you on this. But I think the counterpoint is why are MLS teams unable to do this, but the U.S. national team is? Is it a talent gap? Is it a motivation gap? And it's a little bit of both. The reason why the U.S. national team can go into these venues and win is because they have the motivation, which is to make the World Cup or to win their tournament, and to continue being on the team, versus MLS teams where obviously you're not going to lose your spot on the team for the most part playing in this tournament if you play poorly. And this is the overall talent level. You bring up an interesting point, though, on Twitter about the, you know, if MLS were to offer a bounty to each player of a couple $100,000 for the team that wins. Well, it's an obvious solution to the problem. If MLS is very serious about it, why don't they just offer a financial reward? And that speaks to me where the public face of MLS says, yeah, we need to win this so we can, you know, have our prestige. But the ownership groups and the money managers behind the scenes are saying not really worth it. Otherwise, we would have heard a scheme like this by now, I would think. I mean, they do it for major championships in every other sport. But, you know, it makes me wonder if the owners and money people behind the scenes are just going, you know what, let's not spend money on this tournament more than we have to. Let's just do what we have to do. And if we can just squeak by and win a title, that's great. That's going to help our prestige. But we're not going to put any real money on the line for this one, because what's the financial return when we beat Toluca, you know, for the CONCACAF Champions League? It's not going to sell us more tickets in MLS.
Because, I mean, let's just throw out there, you know, RSL, they came closer than any other team. I mean, they beat Monterrey in Monterrey and then they choked it away at home. But, you know, you look at guys like, you know, Alvaro Saborío. I mean, he's a guy that's been, you know, he's a CONCACAF player. He's been in the dungeon, so to speak, and some of these tough places to play. He probably knows as well as anybody. You know, Beckerman is probably one of the more, what would I say? I mean, I think he has a lot of grit. I mean, you have guys like Olave and Borchers, who are sort of, you know, I consider them to have some guile. So, you know, spit in your face.
Yeah.
But, you know, Raimondo is a great, you know, let's take that and let's take San Jose's result and say, you know, I mean, they came about as close. And San Jose does not have one of these teams that's loaded with superstars. Let's my thought is, I don't think the MLS is all that far away. I do think there needs to be an attitude adjustment. And, you know, if teams start maybe San Jose took this a little more, you know, closer to the vest. You know, maybe they decided, well, we can do this. And they went in and did it, and they almost did it, but, you know, they just were overpowered, you know. But, you know, if you had teams like Kansas City that are probably, technically better and should beat a Mexican team probably on paper, maybe they go do it if they have a little more gumption. I don't know. Maybe that's the best word. There's some words that are choice that I don't think we should say on this that people would say for the ability to go out and do something.
Yes.
And, yeah, so anyway, I mean, I hope here in the next couple of years we see it. I don't know if we will or not. Maybe in our next episode. I don't want to keep going on because we've taken a long time for this to begin with. You know, we could talk about some paths forward, but I think the paths forward for that are also going to be similar to the paths forward for growing the league and, you know, making it more popular and starting to cut into other sports that, you know, for instance, baseball, that are kind of ripe for the picking. Fewer and fewer kids, I think, are playing baseball. More and more kids playing soccer. But, you know, maybe we can try to mark that up either for, well, you won't be around for next episode, but maybe the following one.
Sorry, kids.
Or, you know, we could talk about the Mexican teams, how they're doing in the CONCACAF Champions League now. But
you thought it was hard to find games to watch before. Oh my!
But this isn't the Mexico of football. This is the United States of football. So. I'll throw it out to our listeners. If any of you have any thoughts on this, you know, hit us up on Twitter at US of FUTBOL, US of football. We will take a look at those, either answer them on Twitter or read them aloud here on the show and try to answer them best we can. But until then, I think we're going to take a break. And when we return, we will talk about the matches from this week. And later on, we will discuss the men's national team, who will be heading into their own battle with Mexico come next week. You are listening to the United States of Football, brought to you by Simply Football and World Football Daily. Second segment of the United States Football Show for March 26th. It's third weekend of MLS, and we are going to go through the MLS results. We're going to kind of take this a bit quick because we have a lot to talk about in the third segment, so you know where you can find match results. But, you know, we're going to try to discuss them a little bit. I'll start off with the match that was on NBC Sports Network. Real Salt Lake hosted Los Angeles Galaxy. That ended in a 1-1 draw. Goals from Alvaro Saborío in the 19th minute, and Robbie Keane equalized in the 34th. It was a bit of a chippy game. I believe Saborío took a piece out of somebody there. It might have been A.J. De La Garza. Maybe just about, you know, messed up his leg. But Regardless of that, LA Galaxy kind of looked out of it in the early going. You know, they just faced off, like we talked about in the previous segment, with Tijuana, and I think that took something out of them. It took them about a half an hour to get it turned on. You know, Sabarillo got the goal on a nice, the opening goal on a nice little cross from Joao Plata. He found him at the far post. And then, you know, Robbie Keane got the equalizer fed by Juninho. And that's how the game ended. You know, this has been the, you know, so basically 4 points for RSL in the first two matches against LA, against the Galaxy this season. So that's, I'd say that's pretty good for them. They're going to be, you know, I think we all thought this would be a drop off year for Real Salt Lake, but I'm not so sure anymore. They look like they're able to survive pretty well here in the early going.
And I'll take that as my transition to talk about a game where two teams probably going in opposite directions, unlike this last game. In the home opener for Toronto FC, they defeated DC United 1-0. This is Toronto's first time that they have won two games to open the season. So chew on that for a couple of minutes, and that tells you the Toronto FC history there. Your only goal in this match was by Jermaine Defoe in the 60th minute. Typical DC United fashion, poor clearance led to the ball falling directly to Jermaine Defoe, and he beat Bill Hamid to the, I guess it would be near post off to the left there. You know, this is a gutty win by Toronto. I think actually DC might have had more possession in this match, but Toronto just kind of was more physical and created more of the chances if it wasn't for Bill Hamid kind of saving DC's bacon to help cover some of the defensive lapses at times. This game might have been a lot worse, but you know, Toronto played well. I think the defining image from this match would be, you know, there was a collision with Michael Bradley, and he came away with blood, a nice, nasty little cut on the side of his head that had to be bandaged up. So he looked kind of like a, maybe not quite like Hannibal Lecter, but like a kind of like crazy man who will eat your face with his wild bandage and tape over his head. But that kind of describes, I think, the Toronto play for the day. Just very physical, very dominating. And they look good. Jermaine Defoe looked really nice on the finish. You know, had a couple other chances too. Again, Alvaro Rey looked very good for Toronto. And they look like they're a team that's starting out strong and is going to just, you know, I thought that there would be some growing pains, but right now they're just clicking to start the season. I think it's just going to continue. So for DC, you know, again, what we see is a lack of service from the midfield. Eddie Johnson and Fabian Espindola are really just left helping themselves to try and create shots, and it's not working very well. So as long as DC can't solve their midfield problems, it's going to expose their slow back line and leave their forwards starving. So that's this match.
Yeah, Toronto, they you know, as long as Jermaine Defoe keeps scoring, you know, he was hit or miss with Tottenham. I guess that's really the key for them right now, is he's just on a fire to start the season, maybe from the benefit of being at Tottenham for a while. So, you know, excuse me.
Sounds like Tottenham can use him back because they might need some goals.
Right, exactly. But so, yeah, Toronto. And that was in front of a pretty solid crowd there at BMO Field. So, yeah. So next match, Columbus Crew, Philadelphia Union. One team got a number of sexy additions in the offseason. One didn't. The one that didn't actually came out on top in this, unless you consider Michael Parkhurst to be sexy, which you might, or Greg Berhalter for that matter.
Greg Berhalter is definitely sexy.
Yeah. So, you know, two goals in the first 45 for, for the Crew, both by Bernardo Anor, a couple of defensive lapses from the Union. The first one was on a corner kick. Sebastian Latou failed to mark Anor, who was attacking from deep, and he was able to head the ball home. It also didn't help that one of the additions that they made, Christian Madonna, he failed to do the clearance off the line. He was standing on the post, which makes you wonder why he's even standing on the post if he isn't willing to do that. But in any regard, Madonna was also responsible for the giveaway that set up the second goal by Anor, a 35-yard strike that also seemed like Zach McMath, the goalkeeper, might have done better with. Yeah, and that happened in stoppage time in the first half, which kind of put a dagger there for the Union. It looked like they were, you know, going to be able to make a change or two and crawl back into it and try to maybe sneak out of there with a victory. But instead, they went down to the half 2-0, And in the second half, things changed a bit when they brought on Leo Fernandez. He set up Latu in their match against New England last week for a goal, and Latu returned the favor this week in the 62nd minute. Fernandez got his first MLS goal to bring the Union back to within one, but really the Union didn't get a whole lot closer than that. John Hackworth, I think, nobody. I don't think Philadelphia fans have been thrilled with his substitutions, and he seemed to miss one in this one. He took out Jack McInerney, brought in Antoine Hopinot, and supposedly had Connor Casey available on the bench, and I don't know. I think there are a lot of people that are wondering if he knows how to turn the screws and pull the strings to get things right when things aren't going right. But we'll see. You know, it's not the end of the world. Definitely Columbus is an improved team this year, and the Crew fans that could watch this game if they weren't at the stadium are well pleased with what they're seeing out of Federico Higuain. Although I believe he was fined by the commissioner or by the disciplinary committee, excuse me, for simulation. So unfortunately, that was his only real bad move of this game.
Yeah, never good when you have to fake it. The next game is mine. A high scoring affair. FC Dallas 3, Chivas USA 1. This game was kind of a Dallas. This was Dallas's game to win. They dominated possession and was the better team in this one, but they didn't really break through until the second half. First goal was scored in the 71st minute. Fabian Castillo, and Dallas would tack on two more. Chivas pulled one back to make it 2-1 late in this game in the 81st minute. Eric Torres continues his incredible start to the season. Great start to the season, but really Dallas put this one away late. Things to note, Hendry Thomas received a straight red late in stoppage time for a unfortunate tackle. He had played very well in this game and had, I think, played pretty well to start the season, so keep an eye out for that and see what how long he'll be gone. And then Dallas's speed in the midfield, Chivas just didn't have an answer for it. So a nice win for Dallas in this one to defeat a Western Conference team that looked like could be challenging them for a playoff spot. Earl, on to you.
Yeah, I think just like Philadelphia, you know, nothing to be too concerned about for Chivas. They've been playing better this year, but, you know, the level of talent on both of those teams are probably a little different. So, you know, I don't know. And the Western Conference may be tougher. So, but anyway, let's move on to more Western Conference action. Colorado Rapids and the Portland Timbers. Portland comes away with another loss. They fell 2-0 to the Rapids up at Dick's Sporting Good Park. This game pretty much changed. It was pretty much an even affair for the most part until Donovan Ricketts got red carded in the 71st minute. He came out to attack a ball that was played through. DeShawn Brown looked like he was just a split second behind the ball, but Ricketts tried to play it, and instead of kicking the ball, his foot basically went directly into Brown's chest. Clear foul, clear red card. I believe Ricketts was suspended for 2 games for that foul. It was announced today. But Vicente Sanchez converted the penalty, and there was another penalty not long after that. That Brown actually took the honors, did the honors, and put Colorado up the 2-0 scoreline. How it ended. There was also a second yellow actually for Jose Marie from Colorado. That was kind of a really, because the yellow itself was pretty weak. I think he just kind of like wrapped him up a little bit, and it wasn't really anything worth note, and didn't write down who the referee was, but it was kind of a dubious decision, and so that player will not be in the next match. So, you know, Colorado looks like they haven't really missed too much of a beat with Pareja going to Dallas. And, you know, I mean, good thing for Dallas. It looks like they're playing well with Pareja down there. So, yeah, Colorado moving on up.
Going back to your tepid second yellow card, it's too bad we don't have the regular referees back, and they wouldn't have made that mistake.
Exactly.
Wait, what?
I forgot about that.
Whoops. Dun, 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 dun. I guess you can't change some things. Everyone everyone's favorite team, Chicago Fire, hosted the New York Red Bulls this weekend, and it was a one-all affair. Everybody wins. Chicago got an early goal from Jeff Laurentiewicz, nice little assist from Harrison Shipp, and it was a rockin' Chicago crowd in their home opener, feeling good about themselves before Dax McCarty scored for New York in the 21st minute, and then both teams kind of settled down to get the draw. It's interesting, the result of this game means that neither Chicago nor New York has a win for the season, which I don't know if I would have predicted at the beginning of the year, but so be it. I thought the best way to describe this game was from the New York Red Bull blog, Once a Metro. They described the style of play as, well, for New York anyway, pass, 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 interception, counter, foul. This was the New York Red Bull match from start to finish, so you can see just how exhilarating this one was. But probably a little bit of a heartbreak for Chicago to not get the full 3 points in this one when they played very well. You know, their tactical style might be, you know, questioned. They were a little bit more direct to goal than New York tried to be, but, you know, at the end of the day, they got a point out of it. So,
fair enough. Sporting Kansas City gets their first victory of the year, and it comes at the hands of San Jose at Sporting Park. So, you know, Kansas City, kind of a defensive team for the most part, but they get their goal on a penalty. It was a pretty weak penalty as far as I was concerned. You know, I guess it was tough to tell what Steven Lenhart was trying to do. He was swinging his arm around. I really hate to think he was trying to hit the ball, but it did make contact with the ball. It was kind of pinging around there in the box, just kind of innocently, and his hand came around and he sort of swatted it, and I don't know. I don't know if he meant to do it or not, but unfortunately for the Earthquakes, you know, the referee basically had to give it, and Dom Dwyer got his goal there in the 57th minute. And, you know, Kansas City basically withstood, you know, kind of the aerial assault that San Jose tried to put in there. I mean, Kansas City has enough counterattacking ability to where they were able to, you know, kind of push San Jose back enough towards the end of that second half to where, you know, it wasn't exactly like we saw when San Jose drew RSL last week, where, you know, they just kind of like tossed in cross after cross after cross. You know, Kansas City, maybe it was just because of the fact that San Jose was on the road, but Kansas City was able to, you know, alleviate the pressure quite a bit. And I think that was key in their ability to hold off the Earthquakes, who are, you know, have that reputation of the, you know, the Goonies that never die. Well, you know, I guess they will be resurrected again this coming weekend, but for now they are dead and pointless in their last game. So, good win for Kansas City. They kind of salved over the wound that they were delivered by Cruz Azul in the Champions League the previous week.
So, New England and Vancouver drew 0-0. There's one really good save in this game by Vancouver. Other than that, a whole lot of nothing. Okay, Earl, your turn.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'll say is New England hasn't scored yet. New England is probably happy with a point, but, you know, fans, maybe the fans are the ones that need the salve in this one, because, yeah, that's, I actually caught some of that match, actually a lot of that match, and I was pretty frustrated myself, especially when you're forced to look at Gillette Stadium, and it's, I mean, it's just, it's an ugly place to play soccer. We're going to talk a little more about that later. Let's finish up with the game that was moved from Saturday to Sunday because of snow. Not because there was snow on the field. That was the funny thing. They played in Olympic Stadium, which is a dome up there in Montreal. But the Sounders went in. And, you know, this may have benefited the Sounders, actually, because they got to play on turf. And as we know, Seattle plays on turf at CenturyLink. So 2-0. Goals from Lamar Nagel, Obafemi Martins. Kind of look to have this in the bag from the get-go. Montreal, they haven't had DeVio yet. He will be in, from what I understand, this coming weekend when they face the Union. But without him, you know, Andrew Wenger has not been good enough. And, you know, they just haven't generated enough quality chances to really put forth an effort. But Seattle, typical of what you'd expect of them. Obviously playing without Dempsey, who was given a 2-game suspension because of his crotch shot on, I believe it was Mark Bloom from Toronto the week before, but Lamar Nagel headed a free kick, went off the bar, and then went off of Troy Perkins and in. And there was some controversy about that. I guess he will be awarded the goal, even though I think in other leagues you would see that being given as an own goal as it came off the crossbar and went off the goalie. But it turns out that FIFA's recommendation for that would also be that the player who struck the ball should get the goal. So I guess theoretically, Nagel gets credit. And I believe that's Gonzalo Pineda's first assist in the league, but I could be wrong about that. And then Obafemi Martin's tied thing, sort of tied up the loose end, so to speak, putting the shine on that 2-0 victory in the 58th minute. So, Seattle, they didn't have a great start to the season, but they're starting to get better there. Let's just do a quick run through. I'll take the East, and then you can take the West. How's that sound?
Sounds like something I would like to do.
All right, let's do the we'll do the standings here, the table. So I got to say table. This is soccer. This is football. We've got to talk about the table. Houston Dynamo, they were off this past weekend. They remain up top with 6 points, tied with Columbus and Toronto, who both won this weekend. So 2-0 teams there inhabiting the top three. You have Philadelphia, Sporting Kansas City, both with one win, and you have winless teams from 6-10 in Chicago, New York, New England, Montreal, and D.C. Obviously, early in the season, lots can change. But, so far so good for teams like Houston and Columbus and obviously the class up north right now, Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting standing so far. A lot of winless teams, which is, I guess, not surprising. So you take a look at the West, and probably not terribly surprising, although there are some. First place, you have FC Dallas with 7 points, followed by the Seattle Sounders at 6 points. Followed by the Vancouver Whitecaps with 5 points, and Real Salt Lake with 5 points. Rounding out your playoff standings, if the season were to end today, Colorado Rapids, 4 points. But level on points with them, Chivas USA, although Chivas USA played one more game. Portland Timbers, 7th, have 2 points. San Jose Earthquakes, the Goonies, have just the 1 point off that wild 3-3 draw with RSL. And then in 9th place in the West, surprisingly, although, again, it's early, LA Galaxy, 1 point, but only having played 2 games. So those are your standings right now. If the season ended today, you'd have Colorado playing Real Salt Lake for the privilege of playing FC Dallas, and then Seattle and Vancouver fighting it out for the 2-3 slot. But the season does not end today.
No, it doesn't. And there's going to be...
That'd be a pretty crappy season.
A lot of games between now and the time when those are decided, so... you still have plenty of hope there, fans, if your team is near the bottom.
DC United fans, you really don't have much hope. Probably Montreal, same for you. Yeah, sorry.
Wait to spoil my... I wanted to be the harbinger, the bearer of that bad news. Yeah, you did. Yes, it's easier to drink your own elixir than to
get poisoned
by mine. So... That's our segment here for MLS and the table as of now. We're going to take our second break. When we get back, we will talk about the men's national team. The roster was released today, and we have some other news that we're going to go through before we close it out here. So listen to the B-side shuffle as we head to break here on the United States Football Show. Here we are again. Now we haven't gone anywhere. It's the United States Football Show back for the final segment. Earl Reed, Robert Hay, glad to be here. Glad that you downloaded. Glad that we're alive. Glad that we have soccer in this country. All that good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We hope that we provide all the content that you're looking for when it comes to discussion of MLS, when it comes to discussion of the United States men's national team and other leagues and whatnot. If we don't, let us know. If you are a fan of the North American Soccer League and you want to hear a little bit more of that, hit us up on Twitter, like I said before. USL Pro can be a little bit tough to check those games out, but we would love to give it a try. US Open Cup, we'll do plenty of that. But, we want to be reflexive. We want to be responsive to the fans. So whoever's out there listening, let us know and give us any suggestions or feedback, and we will aim to please.
Well, no, let's not make promises we can't keep.
Okay. Well,
we'll pretend we aim to please.
We will aim. Well, yeah. Well, that's kind of like what MLS does. So
exactly, we're exactly like MLS. We'll give you lip service.
Exactly. So
you had a thought there, but I think I derailed your thought.
That pause before my laughter was just me trying to wrap my head around that. But and finally, I did. So takes a while.
Yeah.
Sorry. Anyway, I guess we'll move on.
United States men's national team roster was released this week, or just today, right? Earlier today. This we're being recorded on Wednesday.
Yes, that's correct.
And so. This is, you know, this was a long-awaited roster release because the closer we get to Brazil, anytime you have a team like this being put together, especially playing a team like Mexico, it's basically the core team that will be with Brazil. Plus probably some fringe players. And this is, as someone said in an article I read, this is what you want to be on. If you're on this list, then you stand a puncher's chance of being in Brazil at the very least. So for those players who did make the list, this is kind of a big deal. So we're going to just quickly go through position by position. I'll start with the goalkeepers. Your three goalkeepers called in were Bill Hamid from DC United, Sean Johnson from Chicago, and Nick Raimondo from the Real Salt Lake. Earl, give us some defenders.
Okay, so defenders, you have two that are from Puebla of the Liga MX, DeMarcus Beasley, Michael Orozco. You also have a number from the MLS.
The MLS.
That's going to get a lot of
Getting in trouble for that one.
But okay, MLS. We could have a whole discussion about this, the versus not the. So, but Matt Beisler, Brad Evans, Omar Gonzalez, Clarence Goodson, Michael Parkhurst, and DeAndre Liedlin. And I could list the teams they are from, but I just went through all those names and didn't. So if you wanted to hear the teams, sorry, go look it up. But yeah, that's what we got right now. You should probably recognize most of those names. Maybe Yedlin would be the only, but you recognize his hair, so that'd be good.
Oh yeah, you can see it from a mile away. Looking at the middies, we're all MLS in the middies. Kyle Beckerman, Michael Bradley, Brad Davis, Landon Donovan, Maurice Adu, Luis Gil or Heel, depending, and Graham Zuzi. And to wrap it up, the forwards.
Clint Dempsey, Seattle Sounders, Julian Green. There is your
shocked.
Big exclamation mark, exclamation mark, exclamation mark from Bayern Munich. Eddie Johnson from DC United and Chris Wondolowski from the Earthquakes of San Jose. So, I can't really say that in my mind there are a whole lot of surprises here. What do you think?
No, I agree with you. The first thing we should mention is, for those who haven't noticed, this is a very MLS-heavy roster, and, you know, Jurgen Klinsmann isn't going to call in a ton of European players for this roster just because of the timings. So don't freak out that, you know, Tim Howard isn't on this list. It's okay. He'll be in Brazil. No, I think there's some fringe players that could be coming on. In terms of surprises, who surprised me that's on this list? He's not a surprise at this point because I think he is the fringiest of fringe players. But Chris Wondolowski keeps getting chances for the U.S. men's national team. And you know, I'm on record as not being sold as Chris Wondolowski is an international player. I guess, you know, there's no harm in bringing him in just for one more camp to see if he can contribute anything consistently. But, you know, Wondolowski's kind of a surprise. Gil's a little bit of a surprise for also late, playing very well this year. But I'm not sure exactly where he fits in the whole scheme of things. I guess this is just kind of a tryout for him to see, you know, how he plays with these guys. Michael Orozco's kind of fallen far down the list. He used to be one of these bright stars for the future, and I think he kind of has fallen off a little bit. So this might be another chance for him at that. But other than that, I mean, this is pretty much what we expected, I think. Unless I'm missing something, this is a pretty standard group from Jurgen.
Yeah, I guess my only surprise might be that instead of trying to bring in like a Shane O'Neill, who is from Colorado, a defender, or, you know, I mean, I don't want to throw out too many names because, you know, it all depends on kind of like where you're, you know, which team you support or whatever. I mean, you might have your own ideas of who might qualify to be so-and-so a defender. But, you know, you've got guys like You know, Michael Parker is going to be there, but, you know, Michael Orozco Fiscal. I mean, it's like, is he, you know, the infatuation with him is because he scored a big goal at one point for the U.S. I think that's kind of like the thing. Again, with Juan Delaski, he's a guy who, when he's hot, he just seems to find the ball and knows how to do something with it. And when he's not much use. But, you know, if he gets on a hot streak before, right before Brazil, he plays in those friendlies, he gets hot, goes down there, you know, he might be a guy you bring in the 75th, 80th minute, you know, you know, if you're down a goal and you need to bring in, you know, take off, you know, Jermaine Jones and you bring in Chris Wondolowski, you change your formation a bit, go two forwards, you know, try to get that goal. You know, he's the type of guy that if he finds a ball and he has any space, it's probably going in the net or is going to force a quality save out of the keeper. So I guess that's my thought on Wondolowski. You know, what I'm thinking by looking at this roster is you have Julian Green, who might actually be the guy that kind of kicks Chris Wondolowski off the team. And I don't know.
Yeah, I think you're right on that.
Yeah. And I guess just as a sort of an aside from this, I might as well throw this out there. I don't know if you saw that Jurgen Klinsmann kind of stood up for Clint Dempsey's suspension, like, you know, when he whacked Mark Bloom in the midsection.
Bloom and onions.
There. Yeah, and how, you know, basically Klinsmann said that, you know, Dempsey was getting, you know, fouled pretty harshly and hasn't been treated well so far. You know, I mean, you could just tell that, for one thing, Klinsmann doesn't have a great opinion of MLS and the style of play and the way that there's a lot of, you know, I mean, it's tough to say anything about it because, number one, Dempsey tends to be physical anyway. But, you know, Seattle has their own bulldog in Ozzie Alonso who just takes no shame in, you know, putting cleats to people and doing what it takes to, you know, be a dirt dog in the trenches, so to speak. So, you know, but what are your thoughts on that? Any?
No, except you're right. Clint Dempsey's no angel in this situation, and Jurgen Klinsmann does not think highly of MLS, and I can kind of understand the reasons why he doesn't. He knows pushing his guys to play overseas so that way they can play at a higher level and instead of playing in a more physical league, and, you know, this is all a manifestation of that. So,
I will say my caveat to this, I have this one little inkling, and so I don't want to go too deep into it, but I'm wondering if Klinsmann is afraid he's starting to lose the players. When you start doing something like bringing in a guy like Julian Green, who really has no business going to Brazil, and, you know, there's still a lot of talk that he might be on that plane to Brazil, and that may have been the way that they secured his, you know, change of, you know, his change of team or whatever you call it, allegiance. I can't remember what the technical term is, but, you know, there's a theory that he was promised to go to Brazil. You're taking away someone who has been through the fights, went down to these places in Mexico, went down to the place in, you know, down to Costa Rica, went down to Honduras and battled. And one of those guys is probably not going to make the team. I don't know. I'm not sure how well that sits with your leadership within the team when you say, we're not going to take so-and-so because we're going to take a guy who has never played with the team except for this one friendly in April of the same year. You know, I don't know. I'm wondering if this is Klinsmann trying to reach out and say, hey, Clint, please don't be mad that I'm bringing Julian instead of so-and-so because, you know, I know that this has the chance that, you know, you guys could be really ticked off about this. I don't know.
I think you're looking at it from the wrong perspective. Here's how I look at it is. I look at it as Clint Dempsey, good Lord. Jurgen Klinsmann sitting there saying, you're not good enough. You know, we're talking about these players who he's going to keep off the team, you know, the Chris Wondolowskis of the world who have gone down to Central America and Mexico and played. But what have they really done? Have they proven themselves to be world class? Not really. They're fringe players. So now you're bringing in a guy who, albeit young and doesn't have a ton of international experience, is playing in the best club team in the world right now. Granted, in their B team, but still, he's playing with some of the top players in the world. And so I think this message that's coming through is, this is not the good old US of A of old, where it's, you know, you have your top 10 players, your top 15 players, and those are the guys who are going to play. Everybody knows kind of what's going to happen. We're now able to recruit internationally, go out and get players with dual nationality, get these players to come over and compete. And there's no resting on laurels anymore. If you're fringy, maybe not good enough, we'll find a player in Germany that we can bring over that is good enough, or we think is good enough. You know, we'll run this more like a club team. So I'm just taking a different perspective on it. I know it's somewhat shady to bring over a guy and promise him a spot in Brazil, but you know what? I'd rather have Julian Green than Chris Wondolowski on this team. I'll put it right there.
Okay. Yeah, that's fair. And really it almost highlights the double talk that you hear from Klinsmann, where in one out of one side of his mouth he's saying, I'm fine with players coming back to MLS, yada yada yada, and MLS, I think we've heard more of that kind of, I don't want to say capitulation, but, you know, he was pretty clearly not happy with players who were staying in MLS a year ago, and now he's much less vehement in his disapproval of that. But then you see this kind of thing where he's still going out and trying to pull in, like you said, Green obviously has what appears to be a bright future. So
I have a feeling the guys writing him the checks prefer that he not trashes MLS as much as possible.
Absolutely. So who do you think? Who do you think wins this match? Does it matter?
I don't think it matters, but we're playing at Phoenix. I'll say a draw on this one. Maybe a 1-1 draw.
Yeah, sounds good to me. I think that's probably going to be close. Yeah, it'll be a tight match like that. So let's get on to some other news now. Fans of the Premier League, or even fans that casually watch Premier League and know anything about Manchester City, know that Etihad Airlines sponsors them, sponsors their kit, sponsors their stadium, and they are now the new airline partner of Major League Soccer. So I don't know how many domestic flights Etihad Airlines has in the United States, but I guess that doesn't really make a difference, because if you have the money, MLS will do business with you.
Yeah, pretty much. Okay. I think that's pretty, yeah.
Any?
Yeah, I don't know. When I first heard this announcement, I kind of felt dirty, and I couldn't put my finger on why. The only reason I could think of is because they're basically the ownership group that's owning New York City FC. And so
there you go. Yeah.
Now the same ownership group that owns New York City FC is now a major sponsor, and that kind of makes me feel a little bit dirty. Like, we knew New York City would be getting favoritism anyway, and now it's like you're giving even more business to this ownership group, you know. But I mean, MLS has always done that with ownership groups. It's just, you know, a different ownership group depending on the, you know, it's AEG or someone else. That's the way they've always operated. The other interesting thing is when they had the announcement, they had the a picture of four MLS players with one of the airline stewardess models that they always bring out for these announcements, and it was Landon Donovan, of course, was one of the players. I want to say Brad Davis might have been the second one, or Graham Zuzzi, one of those two. Eddie Johnson was the third one, which is interesting because, you know, playing for DC United, not exactly glamorous. And then Tim Cahill, which is kind of an odd choice. So anyway, that's just kind of a weird aside. But it's like, why did you pick those four collection of players to announce this deal? You went with three Americans and one non-American, or I didn't quite get the mix. But anyway, it was a weird announcement.
It's Bradley, Donovan, Cahill, and Johnson.
Bradley, of course. Yeah, sorry.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I guess that they wanted a broad brush of, a cross-section of who makes up MLS. So, notably, they didn't pick up any players making $35,000 a year. But, I guess those players, you know, your Clint Irwins aren't exactly...
They're just happy to be there.
Yeah, they're just happy to be there. So... I guess we'll move on to something that's, I was going to say, I would be remiss to point out that Etihad is not affiliated with, or is affiliated with, New York City FC. You know, it's like you said. So, I glossed that over a bit. I didn't mean to, but you picked it up. So maybe I'll just cut out what I just said. But, I was just going through some of the stories that are out there. Ryan Nelson, I think he's getting to be get a bit of a reputation of being a whiner. Last week, we heard him complaining about Seattle's turf as being like the worst in MLS, which I find it hard to believe. But, any time you get turf, I don't think it's very good. And, you know, especially a guy who played in England for a number of years, you know, he's gotten used to grass pitches. And so, any turf is just going to look pretty substandard to him. But now he's been complaining about MLS scheduling being extremely tough for them, even though I find it tough to believe that DC United can be, you know, his quote was, "Our start is probably the toughest start of any team in the whole of the league," Nelson told reporters. So I don't know. You know, if it wasn't DC United and instead was, let's say, the New York Red Bulls, yeah, I could buy that. Or if it was, I don't know, the Galaxy. You know, I don't know. Not to bust on DC too much, but if you're going to go and play DC at home, I'm not going to call that a tough early schedule. Sorry.
Not going to disagree with you in the least.
Yeah. And it is a little bit of a turnabout from his last week's complaining. DC United has complained about the pitch at BMO Field, and I don't think
and they should have because it was disgraceful pitch. Yeah. There was brown patches. It was wet. It was slippery. It was bad.
I mean, the thing is, you've noticed this all around MLS. You know, we've had a really poor winter as far as weather goes, and so I think a lot of times where you would have, you know, maybe a little less precipitation. You know, we've had a lot of snow, a lot of moisture. You know, it's just making for torn up pitches. So, yeah, it's been, I think Real Salt Lake was pretty rough. There have been some others. So, you know, there's another time and place for this, but it also kind of bring, you know, there's a point I would like to make, but it's, you know, this isn't the time about this season's, you know, the schedule, you know, whether it's spring to fall, fall to spring. You know, I think you're starting to see some things that may, you know, give you, you know, lend some credence maybe to the idea that you could go the other way, and we're still talking about schedule. But, not that there's anything wrong with it.
Schedules are fun.
Yeah. So, anyway, that's just a little hint. We'll have to pick that up another time. Lastly, I just thought I'd do this for New England fans because I think a lot of New England fans have been waiting for this type of thing to be written. It was written in Boston Magazine, which I would say, you know, you have lots of things written on, like, let's say, SB Nation and some of the fan blogs, et cetera, which will say these things. But to have basically one of the mainstream, you know, press outlets in the Boston area writing this article. So the premise of the article was Kraft Enterprises, or Bob Kraft, the worst owner in Major League Soccer. And, you know, I mean, you're obviously in a situation in D.C. where you might argue their ownership group is currently in the running.
Yeah, but it's kind of hard to argue that the Krafts are not the worst, considering they have a long history of negligence.
Yeah.
But hey, Revs fans, you win a trophy. Yay. I mean, they probably don't give a trophy for worst owner, do they?
No, probably not.
No, sorry, guys.
And I was kind of, you know, I was interacting with some Revs fans on Twitter when I saw this story, and it's, I feel bad. You know, definitely I'm not a guy who likes the Revolution at all. I mean, you know, I kind of feel sorry for them. I feel sorry for their fans, really. And to an extent, the players, because I think the players get a poor shake in this whole deal. You know, especially players like, let's say, Andrew Farrell, who, you know, didn't have much of a choice. You know, you get drafted in MLS, and so you don't get to choose. You know, you see a guy like Juan Agudelo get out of town. I'm sure he had no qualms about getting out of town. But, you know, I was also interacting with, like, Steve Nichol on there, and, you know, he supports the Krafts. And I guess you have to, I guess you understand why, because he was a part of that organization for a while. But, and sort of as a slight aside, you know, Your Honor, will you allow me some latitude?
I'll allow it.
As a fan of the Buffalo Bills, you know, I have not liked the direction that their ownership took the team, has taken the team in the last 15 years. But after he passed away this past week, well, actually just yesterday, you know, all of the stories that came out about Ralph Wilson and how he treated players, how he treated fans who actually got to interact with him and whatnot. You know, sometimes we get blinded by certain things, and, you know, maybe that's the case with the Krafts. Now, I know he's pretty quiet. He doesn't really have much to do with the team, but, you know, when you have guys like Steve Nichol backing him up, even after he isn't a part of the organization, it makes you wonder if there's more to that story and if, you know, really he does care and he's just got a lot of time. He doesn't have a whole lot of time to deal with it. And so he, you know, obviously the Patriots take a lot of his time, but, you know, here's hoping that they figure something out. Just like in DC. I mean, we want to see stadiums. We want to see, you know, the best that you can offer when it comes to venues and, you know, not only New England, but DC.
You want to see stability. You want to see success and stability, at least, you know, trying to be a top flight franchise. And that's what's frustrating about teams like DC and New England and Chivas and, you know, I won't say Columbus, but some of the dealings that they've done are somewhat questionable so far. You want in this era of prosperity, in this MLS 3.0 world, to have all of the teams at least trying to be competitive and putting their best foot forward. And so it's disappointing when you have these teams that aren't even in the same league in a lot of instances with everyone else trying to catch up or not trying to catch up, which is even more frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, and it's kind of a triple knock for, you know, at least for D.C., you can say that the stadium is actually within the city and it's pretty easy to get to. Would you agree?
I would definitely agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, accessibility isn't a problem with RFK. I mean, yes, it's not up to date. It's an old stadium. It's structurally probably not in the best shape it could be or ever has been. But, you know, so that's, you know, it has like a strike against it. Maybe a couple strikes, but it's not like as bad, you know. Gillette Stadium, yes, it's up to date. But to me, I would rather have a stadium that's, you can't use part of it, but at least I can get fans there. If I put a good team in there, I'm going to get 20, 25,000 people. Well, 20,000. I don't know what the capacity is right now for RFK. But, you know, and it's relatively cozy. I think you can get at least a decent atmosphere there, right?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, they have stands that shake when you jump up and down on them, and that was it's always been a selling point. I mean, even back when the Redskins were there. Seriously, there's portable stands that, you know, when the Redskins were playing there, that was one of the big things that the fans would get into, and the stands would jump up and down. It was a trademark. So, and with DC United, that's a big thing. That's where the supporters sit or stand. And so it creates a nice little atmosphere.
Now, I mean, Gillette is the state of the art as far as an American football stadium goes. But when you talk about soccer, I mean, obviously you look when they show a sideline camera that's looking, you know, kind of up at the player, and you see those, you know, upper deck, you know, the upper deck of that is just empty. And, you know, the atmosphere there is poor. It often in the fall has the lines from the Patriots still on the field. I mean, it's almost as if it's an advertisement for the Patriots as opposed to, you know, just out of convenience they're there. It's almost like, let's leave it there because we want to try to, you know, get the name out. And, Foxborough is out in the middle of nowhere compared to, you know, there's no mass transit to get there, you know. And in this article, maybe I'll try to post this on the webpage if you want to go to Simply Football and look at it. But, you know, another thing they bring up is that, you know, why would Kraft want to move the team when he can get Revs fans out there? And it's also like, you know, he owns pretty much most of the land around there. So he's got Patriot Place, which is a bunch of shops, you know. What vested interest does he have to move the team besides he cares about them and wants to move them? I've heard, you know, like I said, Steve Nichols says he cares. I think Taylor Twellman has said Bob Kraft cares. You know, if he does, it might behoove him to speak out more and say, you know, take an interest in the team as opposed to his, you know, what appears to be apathy. But I don't know. I guess maybe we've gone on too long about this. I think Revolution fans deserve better than this. They were a really good team. I think they're actually a pretty darn good team right now. Maybe they've lost their way a little bit early in the season, but you know, they have some exciting young players. And you know, I think if they were playing at a stadium that was, let's say, where Fenway was, but and had a build like Red Bull Arena had, you might see 25,000-30,000 people there. You know, it's,
yeah, agreed.
So. Anyway, I guess we've pretty much talked this show to death, huh?
It feels pretty dead. I think it's flatlining right now.
So I think we ought to close it out here. Earl Reed and Robert, it's been Robert Hayes, been great having you get on the line here with me like we do every week and discuss the state of soccer in this country.
Yeah, it's been real. I'm going to be missing you all next week, but I know Earl's lined up some good people to replace me. I'll be chatting with you guys in 2 weeks.
Yeah, hopefully things don't get too crazy between now and then. You know, we'll have Daniel Feuerstein on from Feuerstein's Fire, and you know, he's very competent, and you know, I'm sure he will,
for a Red Bulls fan.
For a Red Bulls fan. But, yeah, for all you D.C. and Philadelphia fans out there, you will understand exactly what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. So, Robert, how about if you close us out here for this week's episode of the United States Football Show?
It'd be my honor. I hope that everyone out there gets all 3 points this week.